Welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show, on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we're about to have a conversation with Robin Caldwell, who lives in Brussels, has been part of the demonstrations in Brussels against the visit of Donald Trump. And I met her through our mutual friend, Ethelbert Miller, the great poet. And so I decided to write her, and here she is with us. And Robin, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
So Robin Caldwell, first of all, who are you? Tell us a bit about yourself and why you're in Brussels.
Well, I've been here for 12 years.
Wow, 12 years. Okay.
Yeah, I originally came here just as a, what they call a trailing spouse. My husband.
Right.
He was offered a job here, and my kids and I came along, and I've just stayed, and I love it. I'm happy to live here, and I'm sort of settled in, and actually have Belgian nationality now. So, you know, I feel very, very European these days.
Can I ask you a personal question? Why did you do that?
Why did I do that?
Take the nationality, become a Belgian.
Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, I mean, I've had Belgian nationality for about 2 years, 4 years now. And if I'm going to live here permanently, it's a lot better to have the nationality because that entitles me to freedom of movement. I can actually live in any EU country. My kids are now going to university in the UK. At least currently, that's still something that their Belgian nationality gives them access to. That might be changing, obviously, with Brexit. But, you know, it's just if I'm going to live here, it makes a lot of sense to be a part of the place. And I don't see myself going back. I've remarried. I'm married to a European citizen. So, you know, this is my home now. And I feel a lot more secure, basically, just knowing that I kind of have the same rights and responsibilities as everyone else here.
Interesting. So, I take it in the last day you've been part of the demonstrations taking place.
Yes.
In Brussels.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
So, talk about the origins of that. And one of the things you said in your original email that I wrote was there's this broad feeling among Europeans of all political persuasions across racial and ethnic lines. Of kind of really disparaging that Trump is president of the United States.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing, actually, how regardless of the degree of conservatism, and there are conservative people here, of course, people are almost unanimously opposed to Trump. It's hard to find anyone who's even cautiously optimistic. Seriously. I mean, there are some who try to, you know, take a measured approach and want to sort of wait and see. But as somebody in one of my English classes I teach said the other day, at the beginning of his presidency, there were people saying, you know, wait and see, but now we see. And that's very much what I'm hearing among people here. And that's what the demonstration yesterday was all about. People are watching. They see that what he was promising in his campaign is what he's doing. And even if he's being prevented in some ways, you know, as in with the immigration ban that didn't quite make it and so forth, they do see that he means it. He does seem to want to push forward with regressive policies, with attacks on human rights, on women's rights. I mean, a lot of people are really, really upset about his attitude towards women. And I would say the environment, his whole attitude, his attitude that climate change is a hoax. People here just are stunned, absolutely stunned that an educated, presumably educated person could have that attitude. And they're very upset about it because it affects the entire planet. It isn't an American problem. It's a global problem. And America is a massive player on the global stage in terms of pushing environmental policy forward, supporting climate change scientists, changing the way we view our resources and how we use our resources. And if the United States doesn't come on board and take a green approach, that's going to prevent serious change that needs to happen on a global scale. And so, you know, people here are frankly outraged that Trump could be, you know, turning back the clock on that. It affects all of us. It isn't just something that Americans have a right to choose for themselves. It affects Europe. It affects the rest of the world. So, you know, there were lots and lots of people out yesterday saying they were out to speak up for the planet.
And I'm interested in kind of the how this crosses the lines I mentioned earlier, political lines, conservative, liberal, left, also right. the racial ethnic lines, because there are a lot of problems inside Belgium and Denmark and the Netherlands, many places across Europe, around the issues of race and ethnicity, yeah. You know, and then within Belgium itself, there are splits between North and South. So talk a bit about how that fits into all this, if it does.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, you know, as you say, there are racial tensions in Belgium. There are in many European countries. I mean, the immigration question and the migration problem, you know, people coming from North Africa, from Syria, the refugee crisis, it's far bigger here than it is in the United States. It's on our doorsteps. And of course, there are a lot of people who do worry about what will happen if a lot of people who are, you know, unknown are coming into the countries that they live in. And, you know, we've experienced it here, right here in Brussels, you know, with a terrorist attack that was devastating, and still people are very, very aware of that. I think the thing that's different possibly is what occurs to me is that Europe isn't that far removed from, you know, from major, major humanitarian crises, you know, the things that took place in World War I, World War II. They know what it is to have a society really fall apart in a massive and serious way. And I think over the generations, that's really developed a real commitment to solidarity, a real commitment to understanding the plight of people who have been absolutely destroyed by war. Because it's only a couple of generations ago that was them. And so I think because of that, yes, there is concern, and there are people who do feel that migration and the refugee crisis needs to be managed better. But there's a great sense of compassion and solidarity and warmth for people who are suffering. And I think that helps strike a little bit of a balance. People are still very, very willing to reach out and support, for example, Syrian refugees who have nowhere else to go. You do see an enormous amount of support and encouragement for that community. And, you know, that makes a big difference, I think.
And looking at some of the comments I've seen from people who were demonstrating in Brussels, and we should say Trump is there, of course, for the NATO meeting and meeting of European leaders in Belgium at this moment. There's a real cross-section here of people who've been quoted in Telesur and The Guardian and other papers that I've been reading about what's been happening. And there, a lot of it has to do with women.
Yes.
And women's rights. Women very upset about what how he approached his trip to Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. and more. And so that seems to be a cross-current. I've read from women of color, white expats, white Europeans. I mean, it seems to go across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just having had the experience of living in the United States and also, of course, still being very much in contact with family and friends in the United States and living here, a big difference that I've noticed is that there doesn't seem to be any argument here, or very little argument in mainstream culture about women's rights, about what kinds of rights they should have. There are arguments on the finer points, but you know, for example, with the exception of I think the Republic of Ireland and Poland, most of the European countries have no discussion anymore about abortion rights. That seems to have been accepted as something that just needs to be available. Women's reproductive rights are very much supported. There's better health care, obviously. Socialized health care systems are pretty much the norm. So a lot of the things that are still very contentious in the United States have kind of been brought on board in the mainstream culture. Of course, there are people on the fringes. There are people who still are quite conservative about some of these things. And of course, there are, you know, some different differences in ethnic communities, religious communities that have different attitudes. But I think you're right that this is something that a lot of different groups and a lot of different nationalities have come together on. And that was something that was, in a lot of ways, prompted by what happened during the Trump campaign, you know, with his comments, obviously the most notorious one. And people were really outraged. And a lot of people I was marching with yesterday did cite that particular set of issues. And, you know, of course, this administration's decisions to cut back on funding for women's reproductive health in their aid to in international aid. They're pretty appalled by that. You know, they feel that we're in an era now where those things should just go without question. So to have the leader of sort of the most powerful country in the world not supporting those values is astonishing.
Not just Europeans.
No, right.
No, I'm just joking. Yeah, no, right. Absolutely.
But it is. It's here. It's astonishing to most people. Everybody just, their jaw drops. They can't understand how somebody who could behave that way. And not just about women, but, you know, everything that he's done. We know the story. Everything that he's done. They can't imagine that a country like the United States, a developed country, an educated country, could elect somebody who holds these attitudes. So, you know, it's hard for them to understand how this happened.
So, a couple of things here. I was watching some of the footage and looking at some of the photographs of demonstrations in Brussels. And so there were people carrying effigies of Donald Trump, but also of Prime Minister Charles Michel, the Belgian Prime Minister. So I'm curious about the politics of these demonstrations. I mean, I understand that Amnesty International also was one of the organizers of some of these demonstrations. How did that come about? I'm curious about A, what I first said about these effigies of both of them side by side, but B, who were the groups behind the demonstrations?
Right. Well, it's going to depend a lot on the particular cause that that a group is really committed to. So I think with some protests against the Belgian Prime Minister, probably what you're seeing there is some reaction against, well, there are a few things. One, the approach to the terrorist attacks last year and also the ones in France when there was a real serious, police operation to go and find the people responsible. There was a lot of concern that there was a bit of a racist tinge to how this was done. He talked about cleaning up Molenbeek. And, I mean, you can understand.
What's Molenbeek?
Molenbeek is the neighborhood in Belgium where some of the terrorists who were involved in the Paris attacks were found to be living. And then later on, there were some others who were found to be living in that neighborhood, as well as a couple of adjoining ones. And I mean, these are neighborhoods that are largely populated by immigrants, a lot of Muslims, a lot of people from North Africa. And there is some tension, of course, between that community and some of the other elements in Belgium, which would prefer that they not be here. Most of these people are not first generation immigrants. Most of them have been here, they were born here. Their parents might have even been born here. So for the most part, although these are relatively poor communities and largely immigrant or second or third generation immigrant communities, they aren't bad people. You know, like anywhere else in the world, you have neighborhoods that are filled with people of various nationalities and races who aren't necessarily wealthy, who are struggling, who, you know, have a different religious affiliation than another community nearby. And it's not fair, obviously, to blame an entire community for the actions of a few people. And so I think some of the reactions against the Belgian Prime Minister are in response to this kind of attitude that a particular part of the city needs to be, quote, cleaned up. It demonstrates a little bit of lack of regard for the large majority of people who are very, very good citizens and are doing their best. Clearly people who were guilty of atrocious crimes like that had to be found, but that's a kind of different thing. And so there are people who are concerned about that attitude, and they don't want that to be represented in the leadership and government as strongly as they feel it might have been. And of course, there are also other layers in there. Belgium does have a reputation for, although it's essentially a socialist country, there are sort of powerful elements that seem to kind of have a stranglehold on certain elements of the government and business. There are things in the tax code which are beneficial to big business and to people who might want to evade tax and things like that, which aren't always addressed because obviously the people involved. I mean, it's like any other country.
Right,
you
right,
have
right.
These power plays happening, and sometimes they get entrenched in government. So, you know, Belgium's no different from anywhere else in the world. That does exist.
So I'm curious where you think all this takes places like Belgium and groups who organize these demonstrations. The ferocity of the tensions here in the United States between people who do support Donald Trump and the majority of people in America who may not feel as intensely as across the board, but who oppose his election and what he stands for and what he's brought to the country beyond the conservative, liberal, left-wing political mm-hmm. spectrum is intense. So I'm curious where you think how this defines what happens in Europe politically. Does this and the people who and where you think this takes people domestically in places like Belgium?
Well, there certainly isn't the same degree of divide at all between people who, when you're talking about Trump himself and his administration and the government surrounding him now, there isn't a huge divide in opinion. And that's in the same way there is in the United States. I mean, almost universally, people are pretty opposed to what they see happening in American politics. They really are.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, even people who would be very conservative on Belgian or European standards almost unanimously think that Trump was a bad choice. And I mean, I, it sounds impossible, but it really is true. I had a conversation with a group of women. They're all retired. They're not conservative per se, but they are certainly very mainstream, maybe slightly on the conservative side. And I asked them the question, do you know anyone who supports Trump? And they all sort of looked aghast and said, no, nobody. and it's true. It's really true. They just don't see anything positive in Trump the man. Now, some people, as I said before, they're cautiously optimistic, but generally not about Trump himself. They're cautiously optimistic about the American capacity to fight against him. And they're very encouraged by whatever they see coming out of the United States, the protests, the Washington, D.C. march was, the Women's March was a huge inspiration to a lot of people here. They really felt encouraged by that. And they've also felt very encouraged by some of the pushback that they've seen happening, where with the healthcare reform not making it through, with the travel ban being stopped by the courts, those kinds of things, they find reasons for optimism in that. But they do not find any reason for optimism when it comes to Trump himself. Nobody. I can't find anyone who, and I've talked to as many people as I can, and nobody has any sense that he should be in that kind of leadership position.
And I think it's interesting how this is kind of universally held by almost everybody I know who lives in Europe that I've talked to, no matter who they are. And so the demonstration itself, I like a sense of what the demonstration was like to be in, and B, where you think this takes. I mean, I keep saying where this takes us, because I think there's people in a quandary now about what happens next in our world. The increased involvement of, you know, NATO in the Middle East, Trump pushing that very hard, the rise of Saudi influence and more, we can get to in a moment. But I'm curious what the tenor was like in these demonstrations. What did it feel like being in the middle of it?
Right. Oh, well, first of all, it was brilliant. It was just amazing. It was the most positive, sort of joyous experience I've had in a long time. There was definitely a great sense of solidarity. I mean, there were drummers, you know, playing great rhythms, and people were dancing as they marched along. People were cheering, singing songs. It was almost like a celebration, which is really weird when you think about it. But I think there is this great sense of solidarity, this sense that if we all come together and kind of shout about the same thing and all say, no, we don't want to go this way, then it helps everyone feel that much more encouraged that there is enough force there to be reckoned with. And most of the people I talked to said something similar to that. They felt very encouraged by the fact that so many people had felt compelled to come out, take the time to make a witty sign or whatever, and come together with other people, hook up with a group that you support or believe in. It's really just an opportunity to keep sending the message out, not just to ourselves, but, you know, to others who might not feel compelled to participate in something like that, but are feeling affected by how things are changing. You know, we're out here. We all believe the same thing, generally speaking, you know, and I think when it comes to some of the specific things like, concerns about Trump being the United States representative in NATO, or his particular attitudes on climate change, people are really genuinely worried about those things. And so they want to send the message, not just to Trump, who frankly is probably not going to notice or care, but to their own leaders. I mean, that was something that a lot of people said to me. They want the leaders of their countries to notice how many of us are standing up and saying, we don't agree with this man, we don't agree with the policies that are being put in place in the United States, so we don't want you to be bullied by this. Because let's be honest, the United States is an incredibly powerful force in the world. It's probably the most powerful force in very many spheres. And people are aware of the fact that what the United States chooses to do, how it chooses to use its funding, the policies that it makes for its own country, as well as how it participates in global initiatives, really have the power to influence what happens all over the world and how their country's leaders feel they need to respond. People want their leaders here to stand up to Trump if they can. They want them to know that they're supported, in initiatives they can take to say, no, that's not the direction that we're going to take.
Finally, before we go, the one last thought. I'm curious how you view the difference between, just a very personal question, but also kind of political and social, living in Belgium and living in the United States. How do you describe the difference?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, to be fair, I do live in a little bit of an insular world because, number one, I live in Brussels, which it's a very vibrant place, but it's also a community of expats. It's a community of people who come from all the different member states working and living there, in addition to, obviously, you know, Belgians who live here and the different racial and ethnic communities that are just here as citizens of Belgium. But it's a very progressive place. So you know, what I probably experience is not necessarily what someone in a small village in France or something experiences. But I do feel, well, a couple of things. One, just take healthcare, for example. It's just never even a question whether someone is going to be able to have health insurance. I mean, it's not even health insurance. It's just access to the healthcare system. There is no disagreement at all about it. If anything, people get upset because, you know, they might have raised the rate from €8 contribution a month to 9. You know, it's so different in that respect. And those kinds of things make me feel very, very comforted and at home. I know that I don't have to worry about myself or my two daughters. If something serious happens medically, it's not going to break the bank. And it's not breaking the bank to have that security. And there's a real attitude here that this is just life. That is just what you get because you're a citizen, because you're a human being and you deserve it. You know, education is accessible to everybody. It's not always the best education. I mean, there are lots of problems, but it's accessible. University education in Belgium is virtually free. It's just understood that if you're going to go to university, it's not going to be paid for. It's going to be accessible to you because you're a human being and you worked hard and you deserve to get an education. It's that sense of solidarity that's just so ingrained in the culture. And I'm not saying there aren't frictions and differences. And I mean, there are definitely problems just like anywhere else, but those fundamental things, access to education and health, to health insurance and health treatment, it's just a given that you're a human being and you're going to get these things. That's not my experience in the United States, unfortunately, or it wasn't my experience in the United States.
Robin Caldwell, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I deeply appreciate you taking your time with us from Brussels, and look forward to talking again as we see the world unfolding in front of us.
Yes, thank you very much. I enjoyed it very much.